Blog Talk Radio.
Lady, well, no, you know what? I said I wasn't going to say that this week. I was going to start it off like this. What up? What up? What up? What it do? Ladies, well, folks, people, or whatever you like to describe yourself as, welcome to another episode, another week of
Another week of Talk That Talk with Tweety and LJ.
I'm Tweety. Shit, I ain't Tweety. I'm LJ. And Tweety should be on here shortly if the
computer says so and does it correctly. We had a lot going on this week. Well, really, it's interesting because the NBA is out of season, not NBA, NFL season is over. And the NFL, if you pay attention to sports talk radio and podcasts and stuff like that, the NFL drives a lot of content when it comes to sports talk radio. So in a lot of times in sport, when the NFL season is over, sports talk radio is, and even podcasts related to sports, probably do a little bit more creating of content, meaning you got to do a little bit more searching to find content than you do when football season is in, because there's always so much information, because football is once a week, blah, blah, blah. But NFL is not quite, I mean, excuse me, when NFL season is not as easy. Basketball is a little bit, because there's so many games, there's not as much content. I mean, there's more content because there's more games, but it's not as entertaining because it happens so much more often. And people don't get to follow the games as much because there's so many more games. But anyways, NBA trade deadline was Thursday. Leading up to the trade deadline, there was a lot of talk leading up to the NBA trade deadline about a lot of moves that were supposed to be happening. You know, Kevin, it happens in every sport. Not so much football, but in basketball, you hear about a lot of the NBA trade rumor machine. There was all this talk about the Cavs having talks with other teams a really good portion of the season about getting rid of Kevin Love. Leading up to the trade deadline, there was some talk that they were maybe in talks to move Timothy Mozgov. There was also some talk about them moving Iman Shumpert. But the really the only move they really made was they ended up getting rid of Anderson Barzal and bringing in Shannon Frye from the Orlando Magic. And Anderson Barzal ended up in Portland. Actually, he never even made it to Portland because he got cut before he, or waived, whatever you want to call it, before he made it there, and now a free agent. But the Detroit Pistons made a move before the trade deadline. They got rid of Brandon Jennings and the other person whose name they traded escapes me right now, and they picked out Tobias Harris from the Magic. Markieff Morris, one of the Morris twins, went from Phoenix to Washington. I can't remember who they sent back, but those were probably Morris is probably the biggest name, if you want to consider him a big name, to move. And those are probably, I'm going to say, a little bit more of the more notable trades. They probably involve draft picks, but they, you know, the protected picks, and I don't understand all that crap, so I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and act like I do. But with this trade, I think the biggest thing for the NBA trade deadline was what didn't happen. Like I said, the Cavs didn't trade Kevin Love. Going the talk for the last probably 2 to 3 weeks leading up to the NBA trade deadline had been that there were several teams that were interested in Dwight Howard. The rumor mill was that the Milwaukee Bucks were close to a deal, but they wanted Dwight Howard to opt into his contract for that fourth season. He can be a free agent after this season if he opts out of his contract. But they wanted him to do that, but the reports are that he did not want to do that, so the Bucks didn't pull the trigger on a trade. There was some talk about a three-team deal with Melo going to the Cavs. Didn't happen. So trade deadline was kind of a dud. I don't think the moves that were made are going to have that much of an impact on the NBA season. It will be interesting. Channing Frye is not as good as he was before he left the Phoenix Suns and went to Orlando. But it'll be interesting to see how Tyronn Lue is going to juggle the minutes of all those big guys. I mean, Anderson Barzal didn't really play much this season. He started to play a little bit more the last few weeks before they traded him. But he really hadn't played a whole lot, hadn't contributed a whole lot to the Cavs this season. And I wonder if the Cavs are going to try to bring in – when they bring in Channing Frye, who last time I checked hadn't even been cleared to play. But when they bring him in or when he actually starts playing, how they're going to work him into the rotation. I am curious to see how – he fits in with Kevin Love, because the interesting thing that you can put this rotation together, put this lineup together where basically the Cavs starting five or any combination of four other players, but Kyrie, LeBron, Kevin Love, and throw in a fourth guy, whether it be Iman Shumpert at the two or whether it be J.R. Smith at the two or whoever at the two guard position, you have Love at the four, and you bring in Channing Frye at the five to play that center position. The interesting thing to me about that particular lineup is because Channing Frye is such a good shooter from the three-point line, and he can stretch defenses, you can almost – well, not almost. The option that Tyronn Lue now has is instead of using Kevin Love as a pick-and-pop four-man, he can put Kevin Love down low on the box where he probably was – I mean, where he did a lot of damage when he was in Minnesota, and he can use Channing Frye to stretch the defense as that big man who can knock down a three. And I'm interested to see how that lineup will work and if the Cavs will use it, because not only will it possibly – it'll open up the court for them, because if you think about the Cavs' big man situation, outside of putting LeBron at the four position or bringing in a James Jones off the bench and putting James Jones at the four position, which they did more in the playoffs last year when they ran into a bunch of injuries, their big men aren't – really good shooters. Kevin Love's, you know, he's not shooting as well as he has in the past this year, but Kevin Love's not a bad shooter from distance. But neither Tristan Thompson much of an off. He's not much of an offensive threat. Timothy Mozgov, he looks like he's kind of falling out of favor to Tyronn Lue. Tyronn Lue has been the he's taking over as the head coach. But he's not, you know, he's not a stretch five. He's not going to knock down threes. He's not even going to consistently knock down the 18-footer. And then I think everybody kind of knows the limitations of Anderson Barzal offensively. So outside of Kevin Love, the other big men weren't necessarily – they couldn't shoot, basically. So this bringing in Channing Frye gives them a big man who can shoot. And that will, in my opinion, allow them to possibly move Kevin Love back to the block or give him some more opportunities to post up now that he doesn't have to be used as a spacer while he's out there. And Channing Frye can now take on their role of helping spread the defense out to open up driving lanes for LeBron and Kyrie and allow Kevin Love to get down on the post, which will help them offensive rebounding wise as well, because Kevin Love is a really good offensive rebounder when he was in Minnesota. The downside to that lineup is taking Tristan Thompson, Mondov, and even Barajal, all those guys are pretty good defensive players. Tristan Thompson is not quite the rebound protector. He's not necessarily a great rim protector, but he's really good at switching and he's really good at pick and roll defense, and he has pretty good on the ball defense. And Barajal is kind of the same way. He's not as good a defender as Tristan Thompson, but Barajal is a little bit taller, so I wouldn't call him a great rim protector. However, he is a decent rim protector, if nothing alone, because he's tall and he's got long arms. That makes him a decent rim protector. And then Timothy Mozgov is a pretty good rim protector, not as great guarding and pick and roll, but when they get Chan and Fry out there, he's never been an elite defensive player. So while they will be better offensively and they will be able to spread the floor, I think it'll be one of their worst lineups. It'll hurt them defensively to have him in the game, but you know it becomes one of those instances in whether you have to decide. You know, Tyronn Lue's going to have to decide is the offensive production that unit is capable of more important than the limitations that they'll have defensively. Because now you end up with three guys on the floor who aren't that great defensively, between Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, and Channing Frye. And if you have J.R. Smith, you add a fourth guy to that mix, and then you really got one guy who's out there a pretty good defender, and that's LeBron James. But that all remains to be seen. We'll see what how Tyronn Lue decides to work that out as the season goes. The Marquis Morrison to Washington, I don't really think that's going to have much of an impact. I mean, he's a good player. He has not played as well this season. He had some trouble. Him and his brother are kind of still battling some legal issues behind an assault. After Phoenix traded his brother to Detroit, he's just kind of pissed. They traded his brother in the offseason. He's been one to – he wanted to get traded before the season. You know, he was unhappy, basically, because they traded his brother, and his play has kind of suffered. He had some issues with the coach. He's been playing better as of lately since they fired Jeff Hornacek. But he recently got into a struggling match with one of his teammates on the sideline. I don't think this is gonna make that big of a difference for Washington. They may be a little bit more exciting because he can score the ball, he can shoot it a little bit, and they can kind of get away from that line. Even though Nene has been hurt a lot, they can kind of go away from the Nene and the Gortat Nene lineup, and kind of, you know, shift more towards the. Even though Morris, I believe, is 6'10 or 6'9, so he's not like – he's a bigger guy, but he's, you know, physically, he's not physically imposing. He's not like 260 or anything like that. They can probably play a little bit more towards their small ball or a more perimeter-oriented offense is how we'll call it, with Bradley Beal, John Wall, Otto Porter, and Morris at the four, and then any – you know, with either Gortat or Nene playing the five. But I don't think it'll make a huge difference. It's not like they're going to come out and all of a sudden they're going to win the East. Could be a good thing for John Wall because now he'll have the opportunity to – the court should be a little bit more spaced out now because he won't have both of those big men constantly in there clogging up the lane. And like I said, Morris can knock down the three. So that'll spread the floor out a little bit, give John Wall, and even open more driving lanes up for Bradley Beal as well, and you know, take some pressure off of John Wall to score the ball so much. Freedy, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, so I have phone problems, but I'm finally here.
All right, so let's get on. I just finished talking about the NBA trade deadline. I was just talking about Washington and Marquis Morris, the last piece. But we can move on past the NBA and move on to something a little bit more. Well, we won't even get to that. We'll stick with basketball, but we'll take it to the college level.
Right.
If you have not been watching college basketball this season, the only thing I can say is you've been missing out. I know that the Warriors are playing great. Spurs are playing great. There's a lot of some gossip going around. I mean, not gossip, but some tomfoolery going on in the NBA with coaches being fired. All of this good stuff, all of that drama. College basketball has been better.
Yep.
And the Big 12 is the best conference. Seems like their whole conference is ranked in the top 25. It feels that way. But college basketball, they just had a lot of great games. The games this week did not go as planned, I would say. I don't know if you saw any of them this weekend, the top 25 matchups that happened. I know Baylor played Texas and got Baylor dominated Texas.
Yeah, they beat the mess out of Texas.
Jeez, I forget who Oklahoma played West Virginia. No, Oklahoma played West Virginia, yeah.
Yeah, they beat West Virginia, but early in the week lost to Texas Tech.
And, there was one other big-time game on yesterday, and I watched it, and I cannot remember. Oh, I don't know if you saw the game last night. Kentucky lost to Texas A&M last-second guy. Misses a shot.
Yeah.
Big man grabbed a rebound, laid it up, or tipped it in, or whatever. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I do. Texas A&M won that game. What are your thoughts on college basketball up to this point?
I mean, I said, it was another big-time matchup. Not to piggyback off what you said, with North Carolina versus Miami. Supposed to have been a top-10 clash, but North Carolina dominated. But, yeah, as my thoughts about the college season is, honestly, there's no great teams. There's a bunch of good teams, but, like, parity is really at its finest right this year in college basketball. As far as, like what you said, as far as the Big 12 conference go, it seems like anybody can beat anybody in that conference this year. And, yeah, it just college basketball in general is a lot of parity, and I feel like that, you know, it's wide open this year in the NCAA, but it's one team I think that a lot of teams wish is pretty glad that they can't make it, and that's SMU, because they've been playing pretty good this year. Not as of late, but as a whole this year, they've been playing pretty good. And yeah, college, there's a lot of good teams in college basketball, no dominant team, and honestly, I can't wait to the tournament.
Yeah, I think the tournament should be interesting this year. If I had to go with a favorite right now, I'd probably take Oklahoma, and it's simply because my philosophy in the NCAA tournament is, in order for you to make it to the championship, you got to have at least one stud. Because when it comes to tournaments, if you get one guy who just gets on a roll, especially in college where teams aren't scoring 100-plus points a game, you know, they're – a lot of teams only scoring 60, 70 points a game. You get one guy, gets you 25, 30 points. That's almost a third of your points every game. And so right now I would say Oklahoma is my favorite to win it. But the one thing that concerns me about Oklahoma is they rely a lot on the jump shot, and the three-pointer in particular.
Yeah.
So that would be my one concern about them. But definitely a great season. Right now I would have – Buddy Hield out of Oklahoma is my player of the year.
Right.
I'm not really
–
Ben Simmons has had a great year, but I think his candidacy for player of the year is more because he came into college basketball with such a big name.
Right.
I mean, you know, Buddy Hield has performed. Not only has he played great, his team has been great. Whereas Ben Simmons has played great individually. And LSU is maybe, you know, outperforming what people thought maybe they were capable of. But, you know, it's not like they're a top 15 or a top 5 team like Oklahoma is. So I think Ray Hill right now, to me, is by far, and I wouldn't say by far and away, but Buddy Hill, to me, is clearly going to be the National Player of the Year. and probably the Big 12 Player of the Year. He may not, if Kansas wins the Big 12, I think they'll probably end up giving, they might give it to Perry Ellis. But I think Buddy Hill, because of his scoring and the way he shot the ball this year, is going to be a Big 12 Player of the Year and the college football. I'm sure the John Wooden Award winner. I'm looking for my other cell phone so I could try to pull up an article on the internet, because I wanted to get into this. You know what? I'm going to catch you with a surprise topic, and then if we have time, we'll talk about the Peyton Manning thing. So, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I don't get paid for it. I'm going to plug it anyways. I love ESPN Outside the Lines. Investigative reporting type stuff, I love it. It's not just ESPN Outside the Lines. I love Dateline. Most of y'all who listen to this probably don't know, but I have my bachelor's degrees in broadcast journalism. Overstatement. But for a good portion of my life, I wanted to be on the radio. I wanted to do sports journalism. And I used to have, when I was growing up, I used to, one show that I wanted to always work on was Dateline. I've always liked Dateline. You don't believe me? If you ever see my mama, you ever meet my mama, if you don't know her, you can ask my mama. I always loved Dateline, and I still love it to this day. Anyway, point being, I was listening to the Outside the Lines podcast, and they had a very interesting story on it, and I wanted to get your take on it. I think it was high school basketball. It may have been AAU, but I'm pretty sure. I think it was high school basketball. Anyways, two teams are playing. One team has got this really good player. I guess she's made a name for herself in the city. what it comes down to is the girl gets hit in the face with the basketball. Her nose gets busted up. And the team who threw the ball somehow gets out that their coach told them to do it on purpose, like intentionally hurt the girl. I don't know. I shouldn't say intentionally hurt, but intentionally throw the ball and hit her in the face, which I guess would be intentionally hurt. But intentionally throw the ball and hit her in the face. Now, the play in question, it happened from my understanding of the audio, because I didn't see the video version of it, heard the audio, is that it was on an out-of-bounds play. Passed the ball in, and whoever the person was in the inbound, it threw it right at her face. The coach is now being sued by the girl's parent. I think it's about a year later or so. The coach is now being sued by the girl's parent. The coach took a volunteer. He's still teaching at the school, but he decided to take at least a year off from coaching. Uh-huh. And now just a legal battle going on right now. What do you think about that? What are your thoughts on something like that happening? One, from a purely basketball perspective, I don't want to color your thoughts by adding to it, but I just say from a purely basketball perspective, and then the other from a coach's perspective on a coach telling a player to do something like that.
That's on a purely basketball perspective. I've never seen the strategy or heard the strategy of throw the ball at their face. I've heard the foul really hard strategy. I've heard the, you know, maybe get a little extra push in on a fast break, but I've never seen or heard a coach say, hey, throw the ball at the girl's face to get out. My thing is, as far as a purely basketball, that really has no place on the court. But as far as a coach sending a player out to do a certain job, whether the fans think it's a dirty job or not, I hate to say it, but that happens. If people would recall about a good name, might have been about 10 years ago. You heard Bob Chaney from Temple say he had to send out his goons, which means people on his team whose sole purpose on the team was to foul. And foul hard. That happens. You have people on your team who really can't play the game or can't play the game as well as the others. They got six fouls to use, or they have a specific mindset that can be valuable to the team. And, hey, I might need you to do something dirty. Now, do I think that intentionally hurting somebody is welcomed in the game? Nah, I do not. But, yes, there are people who are on that team or any team that are probably going to be designated to do something that a lot of people are going to think is rubbing or stretching the rules. That happens. But I don't think that throwing a ball at a girl's face should ever be a part of that, if it was intentional.
I think I may have to disagree with you just a little bit. I have always, I mean, I think there's a difference between physical play and being dirty. And I don't agree with any team having a player on the team who's out there to play dirty. Like, to me, an extra push in the back, to me, that's a dirty play. Cause
it is.
A hard foul, to me, is different than an extra push in the back. Or a guy who's, or a girl whose job out there is to intentionally rough up a player on the other team. I think that's crossing the line. If you come into the game and your job is just to foul, I don't think that's crossing the line, because I think that's strategy. Now, if you go out there with the intent to harm somebody, and this is from a coaching perspective, I think that's wrong. I think it's wrong for any coach at any level to tell an athlete to target a player when it comes to intentionally injuring someone. But the interesting part about this, though, is one, what is the difference between you throwing the ball at her face or the player's face and hitting them in the face while you're inbounding the ball, and it's a clock. If you're, you get 5 seconds to throw it in. If you're about to run out of time to inbound it, instead of getting an inbound violation, you throw the ball off of that player to try to make it go back out of bounds.
Honestly, I don't think there is a difference, but I don't know if you can actually do that anymore, though.
You still can do it.
I don't know if you can actually intentionally throw it at a player no more, can you?
Yeah, you can still do it. So is it, I think it's the intent is probably, I think the intent is probably where the issue comes in. But, you can throw it at somebody's head and never assume. The other thing is think about some of the things that you've heard, or maybe, I don't want to say you've taught, but you've heard coaches say while they're teaching kids, or not just kids, I'm saying kids because I'm an adult and I have children. So if you're in high school or below, even in college, I can look at them all as kids now. But, and this thing, when you're being closely guarded, what do they tell you? Triple threat, pivot, right? Keep your elbows up. And what happens? If you turn your elbow,
that person got to back up or they're going to get hit.
Right. And that is usually how and even the verbiage that is used when that particular position, the pivot or whatever, is being taught.
Right.
Is that dirty? Because it's almost like you're as a coach, you're basically saying, hey, I want you to pivot, keep your elbows up, and either that player is going to get elbowed in the face or they're going to move, which, is not exactly the same. But you could make an argument that if that's your kid that's a defensive player and that guy, gal, turns and their elbows into the face, and they say, well, I was taught to keep my elbows up and turn, and I'm going to hit him in the face of that, are they going to move?
Right.
But parents are, super sensitive these days. So maybe it could be the environment in which, we grew up playing sports in that,
I think that's really what it is. I think it's that. I think it's more of the environment that we grew up in than anything else.
If something like that would have happened where we grew up, there's maybe a 50-50 chance that there may be a fight. It may be even more than higher than 50% chance, but probably at least 50-50 that if you throw a ball and intentionally hit somebody in the face where we grew up playing, there's probably going to be an altercation of some sort, whether it's a fight, pushing, grabbing, whatever. But, like I said, the legal proceedings and everything is still ongoing right now. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. But we're out of time this week. Thank y'all for tuning in.
Appreciate y'all. Sorry for the technical difficulties.
Hey, y'all listening in next week. Tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. So everybody listen, we can get more people to hear this great stuff we're putting out. Appreciate y'all again. I'll keep it 100 out there in these streets. It's a beautiful day outside, too.
Man.
Peace.
Peace.